I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Renton's police chief joins us to talk about a stunning spike in juvenile crime and walk us through the latest incident to happen in their city.
And Guardian One, they're bailing at the mall.
Plus, if at first you don't succeed, just bring up abortion. That's what Bob Ferguson's doing. And Ron DeSantis in the state of Florida decide to put squatters on notice. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I almost forgot my signature catchphrase. I was like, thank you so much for, it's not like I don't say it 100 times a year. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Happy Thursday. You've made it through the week of live shows with us thus far. A lot to get to today, including an interview with Renton's police chief that I'm looking forward to on a topic that honestly should be one of our primary focuses as a society, and that is to get a hold of whatever is happening with juveniles. I have a few thoughts on it, and so does he. First, I just wanted to let you guys know, bring things full circle. Remember that gas ban sort of bill that was pushed through at the very last minute in Olympia, HB 1589? Well, Governor Inslee's going to sign it today. And if you recall, HB 1589 has an emergency clause attached to it because apparently it's an emergency to help Puget Sound Energy transition away from natural gas. And so as soon as he signs it, it goes into law. Just a reminder, if you're not familiar, so this is a bill that started as like a full-on no new natural gas hookups and home construction, and then said PSC wasn't going to have an obligation to continue to serve existing natural gas customers, which would have impacted like 800,000 people. It got watered down and watered down and watered down. But I really believe that even the final version that the governor is signing today effectively is a natural gas ban. The whole point of this is to help PSC move away from natural gas and electrify and make all these people who rely on it electrify their homes at a cost of tens of thousands of dollars per household. So this is about speeding that process along. So why I say that's effectively a ban is if you're in the building industry and you're building new homes, why would you build new homes with natural gas hookups in PSC's service area or frankly anywhere across the state? Because you know that they're moving away from it. So yeah, you're gonna have to build homes that are based fully on electricity. And then you as a household, I'm a PSC customer, you're just gonna have to start expecting that one day you will have to pay to electrify your home. I don't know if that's gonna be in 2 years, in 5 years, in 10 years, but for a lot of working class families, that might cost 40 grand and you're probably gonna have to spend the better part of 10 years saving up for that. So the governor signing it today, because it has that emergency clause, it protects it from referendum, which we've talked about this on the show. They abuse the emergency clause so much. Wasn't it, I wanna say it was the tax on capital gains that they put an emergency clause on because they didn't want it to be subjected to referendum. So it's just all a ridiculous abuse of power. However, it doesn't protect it from being the subject of an initiative, as we're seeing this year with capital gains. There's an initiative to overturn capital gains in November. So I'm really hoping, waiting to see if after the governor signs this, some brave force we'll run an initiative on it to try to give people the ability to not only overturn this law, but let's set some ground rules here for the state's transition away from natural gas. So just wanted you to keep your eye on that. It'll be signed into law today by the governor, and then we'll see. Maybe someone wants to challenge it and run an initiative. Also, before we get to some crime stories, Bob Ferguson, man. You know, he's just talking about his public safety plan. It's all he was talking about on Twitter. Oh, I came out with a public safety plan. I mean, he's still talking about it on Twitter. He's still, oh, look at all the attention my public safety plan is getting, to which I responded, not good attention. I don't know what kind of attention you thought it was going to get. And he's been pretty widely criticized on social media for pretending as if he is going to be a public safety governor when his time in the Attorney General's office has been anything but focused on enhancing public safety. So if at first you don't succeed, you just go to what's tried and true, abortion. So now he's like, I almost feel like the public safety thing tanked so bad for him. He's like, well, I tried something new, but I'm just going to go back to Trump and abortion. Trump and abortion, Trump and abortion. Bob Ferguson tweeted out, the threat to reproductive freedom here in Washington is real. Dave Reichert is anti-choice, not pro-life, huh? Anti-choice, because they think pro-life. It's like, isn't everybody pro-life? So they don't want to assign pro-life as some bad thing, right?
And
so
he's anti-choice. Never said he wasn't, because it's not even a thing.
It's not even a, right? So it says, Reichert is anti-choice and will never defend you from these attacks. I have and I will. And look. This is what we know. It's going to be Trump and abortion. He tried to sprinkle in public safety and talk about issues, but nobody believes that he actually cares about public safety. And this is a challenge for Dave Reichert, I think. So Dave Reichert is pro-life personally, but one of the very first things he did when he came out and did interviews when he launched his campaign for governor is said that he would not, as governor, want to restrict our current laws around abortion, which were established by the voters via initiative in the 1970s. So he has said that if there were ever a scenario, which is highly unlikely, and I'll explain why momentarily, if there was ever a scenario where some bill came to my desk to sign as governor that had to do with eroding abortion rights, I would send it back to the people, because the people are the ones who set our current laws, and the people should be the ones to change them if they want to do that, which they don't, and he knows that. But just all of this aside, and what I hope most voters can keep in mind as Democrats try to distract them with these, you know, shiny objects, is that it's impossible for a Republican governor to erode your abortion rights by themselves. And right now we have a Democratic trifecta, and there are an awful lot of Republican state lawmakers who aren't interested in eroding abortion rights. You'd have to have not only a Republican majority in the House, Senate, and a Republican in the governor's office, but you'd have to have a very strong Republican majority and a very conservative one that would actually want to go around the will of the people and erode your abortion rights, which is just never going to happen. It is never going to happen. And so that's what they want to do, is focus on the stuff that fearmonger so they can try to win suburban women and those on the fence. And meanwhile, Dave is going to keep focusing on what actually matters in the state of Washington. And crime is a big one of those things. Crime is one of those things. All right. Speaking of, so we talked on the show last week about what's happening not only in the city of Renton, but all over with the spike in juvenile crime. And, you know, I've said that I think there's a few factors at play here. One of them is no consequences, and I think that's very obvious. When you have juveniles committing felony crimes over and over and over and over again, like car theft, for instance, and they don't even get booked into jail, or they're let go without any bail and, you know, turned over to their parents, and then, you know, they're never charged, or if they are charged, they spend a month in juvie hall. It's like they're like, I'm getting the gains from this are better for me than the consequences when you weigh it. So, but I think there's another element too, and I just want to talk about this first before we get into this interview with the Renton police chief. I also think social media has done this. Social media has bears a huge responsibility for the way that our juveniles are behaving. And this is true on a variety of fronts. I've said, I think one of the crises with juveniles is they lack interpersonal skills. Like, they cannot build meaningful human relationships with people, because so much of their lives in this younger generation have been spent staring at a phone or a screen and building relationships that way, where you're not seeing and feeling someone and their emotions. And it's like there's this disconnect that's built in there. And I think that's why you're seeing more violent crimes and more violence on the roadways of juveniles, is they just don't see it. Truly, it's almost like the video game effect that we talked about, you know, a decade or two ago. It's just this real disconnect between empathy and accountability. And there was this case out of Seattle that spells that out perfectly. You also have people who are doing things for social media clout, including dangerous things, including violent things. I mean, how many, if you've been scrolling on social media lately, I see videos all the time of people being beat to a pulp, of kids being beat to a pulp and other kids, and they'll film it and they'll put it on social media. The violence is insane. So anyway, there was this social media Instagram user who was filming himself driving at crazy speeds in Seattle and then posting it on social media. And so he was recently caught. It says, this is from Como News, city attorney charges Instagram user who filmed himself driving 107 miles an hour through Seattle. We're talking about on 4th Avenue, not the interstate. 107 miles an hour on 4th Avenue. So this is a description of what happened from Como News and also what this young man told police. It says, according to the charges, Miles Oliver Hudson, 20 years old of Seattle, unapologetically posts videos of his reckless driving through the city, including one video in February where prosecutors allege he filmed himself driving at 107 miles an hour on 4th Avenue. Quote, and this from investigators, on this page, there were photos of what appeared to be the exact same vehicle that Hudson owns. It had the same vinyl wrap in the same color with the same wide body kit and the same tiger stripe Hellcat logos. So they're like, we know that this is him. We know it's not just him posting videos like that are from somewhere else ripped off on the internet. No, this is his car. He's posting videos of him speeding. So it says Seattle police stopped Hudson last week for speeding near 4th Avenue and Yesler Street. Quote, I asked Hudson why he didn't just go to a racetrack to utilize his vehicle there. He stated that he had almost 700,000 followers on his social media and that the amount of money he makes on filming his videos of him in his vehicle on the street has paid for the car. Hudson stated, quote, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to make a career out of this. Hudson then showed me his social media page. That is the interaction that a 20-year-old had with a police officer who just pulled him over for going 107 in a 25-mile-per-hour zone. I'm going to keep doing this, he says. Posting these videos and the attention I get from that has paid for this car. He's not only completely lacks concern about the law enforcement consequences, but also, presumably, about the fact that he could very, very easily kill someone doing what he's doing. We just had the story out of Renton last week where you had an 18-year-old who was going, I want to say 100, I don't remember if they came up with the exact speed he was traveling, hit a car up full of a homeschool group, killed a woman and three kids inside. They don't understand that there are consequences for their behavior, and social media rewards them for it. I don't know why social media, I'm not all for banning accounts, but if you're posting illegal behavior to get clicks and payouts from social media companies based on the number of views, you should automatically be banned for that, should you not? You know, we talked, gosh, there's so many relevant stories to this. Just earlier on in the week, we talked about those two 16-year-old gangbangers who were found shot to death and dumped on the side of I-5. Well, and then we found, through Safe Seattle, images of them and an Instagram account where all it shows is gang members who are clearly juveniles, you know, with their guns that they clearly have illegally, talking about committing criminal acts. How are those accounts allowed to exist when you're engaging in or actively promoting criminal behavior? So there's a whole system-wide breakdown here. But now I want to take you to the city of Renton. So just last week, the Renton police chief came out with a statement. He's like, enough is enough. We have to talk about what's happening with juveniles. We have to come up with some sort of solutions. And at the time, it was after they had arrested three 15-year-olds. And they were talking about that incident. You know, they were in a stolen car, they were driving, they fled the scene, officers caught up to them, one had a loaded gun that he dropped while trying to escape. And again, we're talking about 15-year-olds, and in this press release, he said that there'd been a 40% increase in juvenile assaults, 2022 to 2023. There was a 900% increase in juveniles committing armed robberies at gas stations, which is insane. A 342% increase in Renton in juvenile property crimes. So they're seeing the numbers just go through the roof. And the Renton police chief is like, we have to start speaking about this. We have to start talking about it honestly, and we have to look for solutions. So Renton police chief John Schult was nice enough to join us on the show today, but also just prior to him coming on, his office provided us with some video of just the latest crime that happened in the city of Renton involving juveniles. So we talked to him about that as well. Chief, welcome to Undivided.
You know, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I appreciate you just kind of saying what needs to be said about what we're seeing with juvenile crime. You articulated some of the numbers in a letter that you sent out last week. I mean, one of the ones that stuck out to me, 900% rise if you talk about juveniles who commit armed robberies at gas stations. That's right. Insane. I mean, it's not just happening in Renton, but what do you attribute this overall rise in juvie crime to?
Right. And like you said, it is not exclusive to our city, and it's a regional issue that we've been seeing. And, you know, I attribute it to that they're just getting more and more emboldened. There's, I think, a lack of consequences at a certain level with it. And you know, a law without consequences is just a suggestion to them. And honestly, the suggestion ain't stopping them from doing it. So, you know, it's that accountability piece, consequences associated with committing crimes. And if there aren't any for them, then they're going to just continue to cross that line and cross that line and become more and more serious in what they're doing.
I like that line. I'm going to take that. A law without consequences is just a suggestion.
Right.
I like that. So we see, and we're going to talk about one of the latest crazy incidents you had there. But first, because I think it speaks to it, are you seeing with a juvie crime that it's being perpetrated by kind of a small number of juveniles who are just repeatedly committing crimes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we're seeing a repeat offender, if you want to say. Yeah, over and over. We have most of these people identified and know them on site when we understand the crime. But it's, again, it's getting them the help they need through some type of incarceration and programs.
So I want to talk about this latest case because it speaks to that issue. Everyone's heard by now of these Kia boys, as they call themselves, that are just out terrorizing communities in South King County. And now it appears that you guys have had a run-in with them as well. So we're going to play this video of this red Hyundai, but just sort of give us the basics of what went down.
Right. This is absolutely insane. You know, it starts out obviously with the stolen vehicle, but then they committed a myriad of other crimes along the way, including some package theft, obviously the reckless driving. And you can see how that even gets worse as they're trying to flee from us. But at one point, and this is just what boggles my mind, is they ended up pointing a firearm at an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old that were walking home from school. For what purpose? I would have no idea, but, you know, scared those children. I mean, I can't imagine the trauma they went through having to, you know, this group of kids pulling a gun on them and pointing it at them is absolutely incredible. But so following that, we were able to locate the vehicle, fortunately enough, right here in Renton, Guardian One's home. So the Sheriff's Department helicopter was able to get up. And I think the video you have is from their perspective of following the vehicles. They drove, this is 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4:30, rush hour traffic as they drive, weave through oncoming lanes, putting our entire community at risk. I mean, our whole job is to protect the safety and welfare of our community. And they just, it's a slap in the face of, you know, trying to keep a community safe.
Yeah, a couple details of that. So at one point, they exceeded 65 miles per hour, which on those surface streets, and especially when they're going in the wrong lane of travel, is incredibly dangerous. But you mentioned air support. So one weird aspect of this is they get to South Center Mall, and they almost drive the stolen vehicle under kind of this overpass where they crash it into this pole. And then they scatter and start to go into the mall, presumably. It just feels like they knew they were being tracked by Guardian One. Why else would they do that?
And Guardian One, they're bailing at the mall. One just ran westbound into the parking lot. Another ran, or correction, south into the parking garage. Another ran north towards the mall.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It was if it was an excellent or brilliant tactical move on their part. Finding a spot where they were partially hidden, and at that point they scatter either into the mall or out through the parking lot. Fortunate enough, you know, with the information we had, Guardian is absolutely incredible getting resources into the area when they knew that they were going to be heading to the mall. So there were lots of uniformed officers on scene, both from Renton and from Tukwila at that point, to help. At least Ted got two into custody at that time, and I think we were able to identify the other two.
Yeah, so 14 and 16-year-old arrested. The other two that still have not been arrested, correct? 14 and 15?
I believe so, yes.
So they're members of the Kia Boys.
Right.
And explain to people who aren't familiar who the Kia Boys are.
You know, it's kind of a group of juveniles that, you know, have fun stealing cars. And obviously the Kia and Hyundai's, you know, at that point where they're very easy targets because of the, you know, issue with being able to start them with just a fob. And so they kind of branded themselves the Kia Boys just based off the vehicles that they were stealing and joyriding in and committing other crimes through.
Here's what I don't get, Chief. The Kia Boys have been all over the news for doing stuff. Right. I mean, you know, around a school, shooting a gun into an air, you know, stealing vehicles. How are they still out there doing these things? I guess I don't understand how they're not in jail.
Right. And that's, you know, a question that would be posed towards the prosecutor's office and probably the judicial system. You know, we are proactively going after them, arresting them. What happens to them once they get to juvie is kind of in their play.
But why? So when you talk about the most serious aspect of this case, which is they pointed guns at an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old.
Right.
Who called 911? I mean, what crime is that? Is that first degree assault?
Assault, absolutely. Okay. And you know what we're still looking at with in relation to that is being able to say exactly who the perpetrators of that were. You know, there were four subjects in the vehicle. We know at least one of them pointed a firearm at these two children. Determining who that was, obviously, I mentioned it before, the trauma that was induced by that interaction. You know, so being able to get the 8-year-old and a 10-year-old to be able to identify which one of those four in the car should it matter, maybe not, but, you know, being able to specifically say that one of them was that perpetrator is what we're still working on. So that part of the investigation is continuing.
Yeah, because what baffles me here is, and I'm not saying I blame your officers, I don't know whose decision this is, but just generally speaking, so the two that were arrested, the 14 and 16-year-old, again, well-known, like member of the Kia Boys, they put the 8 and 10-year-olds at danger, swerved all through traffic, bailed on foot. They were released to family members after they were arrested. Why?
Yes, ma'am. Again, it goes to what crime could we prove at that specific moment? We know that they're involved with it. We had plenty of reasonable suspicion to detain them while we work on our investigation, but we weren't able to definitively have probable cause at the time to incarcerate them.
Because something tells me that their family is not doing a pretty good job at, like, you know, for a regular kid that gets in trouble and gets handed over to their family, like, there might be some more severe consequences from their parents than the judicial system. But given that they're members of the Kia Boys, I tend to think that's probably not the case.
No, and you know, there could be a whole myriad of situation or circumstances around why the family may not be helping. And that's what we're looking at, right? It's not, we don't think incarceration is for every kid that commits a crime, but you should look at the severity of the crime versus what the punishment is. And even for those incarcerated, you know, it's still, we need to look at counseling or programs, mentorship or something. And what resources do the family need? Well, how can we help them in that aspect?
100%. And you said you had a quote in this press release that was put out that I just think is spot on. And it honestly, I could apply this quote to so many of the crises that we're facing in this state. You said, we need not only to start talking about this escalating situation, but we need to start focusing on solutions, which include accountability for actions. You know, right. Just talking about it and just saying what's true. We have a crisis with juvenile crime. Like, that is undeniable. I think that's step number one. And then just putting the rhetoric aside and talking about solutions. I mean, what are some of the things that would be helpful, you believe, Chief, to reduce the amount of juvenile crime happening in your community?
Well, again, it comes down to, we've mentioned it throughout this, is just consequences. Knowing that, you know, if you commit a crime, you're going to be held responsible for that. And you're going to have to do time away from your friends and away from your family. And, you know, jail's not there, you know, as a place for recreation. It's there for you to have the time to reflect on what you did and hopefully come out of that and be a productive part of society. And, you know, all these, you talk about 14, 15, 16 year olds, they shouldn't be out committing crimes. They should be in school, you know, and then this was just one example, the example from a week ago when we had three 15 year olds in a stolen vehicle with a handgun. Both of them, it's where are we as a society failing? You know, this is a whole generation that's getting left behind. That's scary. And at the price of our communities and their safety.
Yeah. And also, I would say for people who think it's empathetic, you know, to take it easy on these juveniles, no, they're going to end up dead later in life. I mean, we just had these two 16-year-old gangbangers who were found shot execution style, their bodies dumped on the side of I-5.
Right. And I've heard the argument, you know, like physiologically that juveniles, their brains aren't developed to the point where they understand the difference between right and wrong or, you know, the capacity to contemplate, you know, their actions. And, you know, I have children and they understood the right from wrong and, you know, certain actions just are going to end up being punished for. And I just think the argument is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, and also they're not going to understand right from wrong if they never face consequences for something they do that's wrong. How is that not, that's not teaching them that something's wrong? It just makes no sense.
And then I think the empathetic thing to do is to hold them accountable.
Yes.
I mean, they're, like you said, later in life, we're not doing them any favors. And that's why I say, I mean, as a generation, we're absolutely failing them as a society.
100%. Well, Chief, thank you for doing the very simple thing of just speaking out about this and trying to encourage people to take it seriously and letting people know when these things happen and the impact it's having on the community. That's where it starts. So I also, just really quick, Chief, was it your officers who responded to that fatal collision involving the children?
It was not. That was just outside of our city limits. That would have been in King County.
Gotcha. Gosh, what a horrible situation that was too. And again, an 18-year-old behind the wheel, and it's just unreal the lawlessness that we're seeing. So,
well, acting in an absolutely reckless manner, just like you saw in that video of these four, right, in their Hyundai,
right,
going through intersections, wrong sides of traffic. It's just.
Yeah, could have very easily killed someone, as you said. We're lucky that no one died in all of this. So, Chief, thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
That's Renton Police Chief John Schultz joining us. And, you know, the kids are not all right, first of all. The kids are absolutely not all right. And just, and even if you've got kids that aren't committing egregious criminal acts and out there with guns and stolen vehicles, I also still think we have a lot of issues happening with our juvenile around mental health, around, again, this inability to form meaningful relationships with other human beings. There's so much going on. And if we can't put sort of the politics aside and also understand that coddling them isn't the answer, teaching them in school that there aren't consequences for their actions, that they don't have to meet academic standards or behavioral standards, what do you kind of adults do you think they're going to freaking be? It's wild to me, these adults who think they're doing things to help these kids, and it's the opposite. And like the gang members in Seattle, if they keep going down this path, they're just going to wind up dead. And then how much help did you give them by coddling them in the criminal justice system? You know, one other element of what do we do about all this, I think, takes us to the juvenile detention system, which we know is a disaster in Washington. If they're not out escaping from, what is it, Echo Glen? Then they're down at Green Hill School trafficking in drugs and having relationships with guards and whatever it is. So there was a law changed in Washington State. It was just a few years ago. Inslee supported it. And it said that you could be in juvenile detention up to the age of 25. And that's why some critics believe we're having so many of these issues in juvenile halls, is you're putting possibly 15, 16-year-olds in with 24, 25-year-olds who should be in a prison setting. So I wanted to ask you guys today in our daily subscriber show poll, at what age should juvenile offenders be transferred out of a youth detention setting and into a state prison? So most of you are saying, so I asked 18, 21, or 25. Most of you are saying 18. Literally no one has said 25, but a lot of you also said 21. And I tend to kind of land somewhere in the 18, 21 range as well. Let's see. Steve Gordon says, whatever age we decide as a society is the legal age for adulthood. Prison, voting, military, drinking, smoking, sex change surgeries, etc. And he brings up a point there that I brought up on the show before, is we have these wild, like, all over the place rules for kids, like, that makes them a kid, you know? Like, you can decide to have some sort of sex gender procedure, but you can't get a tattoo, or you can't get your ears pierced. And, like, you can go to war, but you can't drink. So it's like we do as a society need to decide what is a kid and what is an adult? And if we've decided they're an adult, then that's the point where they can start making adult-style decisions. Let me see. Jennifer says, if you can be in the military at 18, you should be treated as an adult at 18. Dave Sprinkle says, 21. If they can't legally drink, they shouldn't be put in with the hard cases. Harold says, 18 is the age of majority for our society. In my honest opinion, we infantilize our young people too much as it is. For most of human existence, we have expected more adult behavior from people at a much younger age. Let's get back to raising expectations. I think where I'm at with this juvenile detention thing is, I think that 18 should be the age where you then go to a prison setting, unless you're going to finish out your sentence before the age of 21. I think that if you're already in a juvenile setting and your sentence is going to be completed before you turn 21, I think you ought to be allowed to stay. But if you're going to serve some long sentence, I don't know that it does much good for them to keep them in a juvie setting and then just at 25 or 21, ship them over to the prison. So that's kind of where I would be on that. But I think that's part of this too, is what's accountability? What's going to teach them that there are consequences for their actions? Okay, coming up next, a couple unbelievable stories involving our education system, and I use that phrase loosely. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. There is really no downside to this. I mean, this is obviously one of our advertisers, but I feel like it just sells itself because we all need insurance, right? And do you want to be dealing with your insurance on your own, trying to figure out what you need, what a good rate is, or do you want a local company that's been doing this for a long time to handle all of that for you for free? Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge about a year ago. We're so glad we did. I cannot tell you how much easier this makes our lives when it comes to insurance. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he says, particularly in this environment where carriers are dropping people left and right for even small little claims, it's important to have an insurance broker in your corner.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now because it's complicated.
Yeah, and there is no obligation. So if you go through the First Mark Challenge, they might come back to you and say, hey, you actually have pretty good insurance. You don't really need us right now. Or they might come back to you and say, we can't, you know, beat the price that you're already getting with your current carriers. So you get to decide whether you want to become a member of the First Mark family, but they're going to go through that whole process and you'll learn a lot when you do it. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they've got your best interest in mind. All right, a couple education related stories. Man, that initiative that was passed in the state legislature to improve parental rights cannot become law quickly enough. I think we've probably got around 60 days still until it takes effect. But we already knew that schools just hide stuff from parents. They tell parents the bare minimum that they're required to tell parents. And we continue to see examples of this and examples of why it was so important for Let's Go Washington to run that initiative, improving parental rights. So the first in our unbelievable series, yes, we're doing multiple today, takes us to Sammamish High School. All right, all the credit to our friend Ori Hoffman on this one, who, if you're doing something anti-Semitic, he's on it. He's on it. This one, we don't really know if it would have been anti-Semitic because we never got the opportunity to find out. So Ori Hoffman gets word of this Sammamish High School, which is in the Bellevue School District, actually. That's kind of confusing. But Sammamish High School in the Bellevue School District, they were going to, in the middle of the day, be hosting a seminar on the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So parents find out about this, and they asked, according to Ori Hoffman, to audit the seminar before it happened. Parents wanted to know, right? Hey, I thought we could have curriculum, all these things. This is happening at 1:30 p.m. We want to know what are you going to teach us about the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Given a lot of things that have happened in public schools and a lot of the rhetoric, I'm sure parents had reason to believe that it might be oozing with anti-Semitism. So Ori Hoffman says parents were denied an opportunity to review what would be included in this seminar by the principal, Derek Richardson. So then, and this gets even worse. So Ori Hoffman files a public disclosure request for the material that was going to be used in the seminar. And this is before it happened. So he files a PDR because parents weren't allowed to audit it. So he's like, I'm going to file a PDR. I'm going to get the material that's going to be used for the seminar. This is what he was told in response. The seminar on the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict scheduled for today at Sammamish High School has been canceled. And there are, therefore, no records responsive to your request. So some people might see that and say, good, there was a little pushback and it was canceled. Absolutely not. What's horrifying here is that they canceled it rather than have people find out what they were going to teach. That's what this is. And Ori says he's still going to ask for the material that would have been taught. But I guarantee you that the planned seminar would have been deemed inappropriate by teachers, by other parents, or by parents, by Ari Hoffman. I guarantee that it was going to be inappropriate. And when they found out they were caught, and that the media knew about it, and that parents were raising concerns about it, they tried to shut up parents and basically said, you can't audit this. But then when they get a legal public disclosure request from a media outlet, they're like, just cancel it, just cancel it. So it's almost horrifying, because now they might have protected themselves from this having any scrutiny for what they were going to do. I almost rather they would have gone through with the seminar so that we could get our hands on what the seminar was via public disclosure, but now it's just a secret. And this is how this is why the Parental Rights Initiative was important. If you're teaching anything you teach in a public school setting, anything, whether it's for students, whether it's for teachers, training, anything you teach in a public school setting, you should be willing to defend the merits of, and you should be willing to fully inform the public about. If you have to hide it, it probably was inappropriate for a public school setting. I think that's probably a good rule of thumb. If you have to hide it, if you have to lie about it, it's probably inappropriate for a public school setting. So we'll see if Ari Hoffman can find out through other means and his connections that tipped him off to this, whether he can figure out what the material was. But something tells me it was inappropriate. All right, let's get to, let's do a trio of unbelievable today. The second story takes us to a Spokane elementary where there was a little bit of a misguided lesson. Boop! Poor teachers, you know, they gotta get creative sometimes. And sometimes that creativity, it just falls flat. And they might not mean to be offensive or mean to offend anyone, but we know in today's day and age, everyone is offended. Not everyone, not us. People get offended very easily, however. So that seems to be the case in this story. So this is at a Spokane Elementary. This teacher, Tamara Knapp, has been a music teacher there since 1994. So she's been there for quite a while and been able to keep her job, which tells me, you know, she's probably an okay teacher. So she was promoting in a school newsletter an event that had been scheduled for March 1st called We Has Jazz. Okay, so she's a music teacher. It was a We Has Jazz event. According to Jason Rance, in his article on MyNorthwest.com, the night of music was meant for students to, quote, take a trip from today way back to the times of slavery in America. Students, regardless of race, were allowed to, quote, dress as slaves, hobos, or ready for a night out to the jazz club. The event was scheduled for Tuesday, but has since been canceled due to the uproar. It prompted an apology from the school as Knapp was placed on administrative leave pending an investigation. But parents and community activists are asking for the teacher to be fired. So now, I don't get in this lesson why she would feel the need to allow students to dress up as slaves or hobos. Because one of the options was, or you could come dressed ready for a night out to the jazz clubs. I feel like
seems more appropriate.
Yeah, I feel like you could have just left it at, hey, come and dress for a night out at the jazz clubs. I'm not sure why in your infinite creativity dressing as a hobo or a slave would have been an option. So I get it. Like this doesn't make a lot of sense. But I will say the backlash against this teacher has been not only overplayed, but it's being co-opted in the language of the far left as a way to push for more DEI. It's like, oh, this one teacher who's been here since 1994 had a bad lesson plan, and now we need to use this as an excuse to push more DEI training in our schools. Now there's this whole segment of the activist class in Spokane, which is a real thing, that's like, this just proves that our school system is racist and we need to do more DEI, which is like, oh my God, of course. They will use any excuse they can to push more DEI rather than treat this as sort of a one-off sort of missed thing. Like, eh, this is a one-off lesson, didn't go so well. But I don't think that we need to label the whole school system as racist over it. Like, let's see if we can learn some lessons from this without absolutely losing our minds. But of course, in today's day and age, there is a segment of people who only know how to absolutely lose their minds. And that takes us to the third in our installment of Unbelievable. Okay, so after this controversy at the Spokane Elementary School in the school district, the Spokane NAACP got involved. And they asked the school district for an apology. The school district issued an apology, and it wasn't good enough. The Spokane NAACP said it did not repair the potentially harmful impacts this type of request could have on our students and our families. They did not indicate that anyone was specifically harmed by the newsletter, but said the event, you know, amounted to blackface, being, you know, allowing students to dress as slaves, essentially. So they asked for an apology, got one, wasn't enough. And then they organized a community town hall to deal with the fallout from this called Addressing Racial Incidents in Our Schools. So this was a town hall that was held, according to Jason Rantz, at the Spokane Library this week. So it was open to the public, but Jason says, based on the video he saw, it was just packed with activists who, again, wanted to co-opt this unfortunate lesson from a teacher into, we have to redo the school system because it's just inherently racist. And of course, there was a middle-aged white savior there who just had to make sure that he properly apologized for the sins of every white person on planet Earth. So here is a white teacher who showed up at this town hall to comment on now this new thread that Spokane school districts must just be racist.
Training doesn't work in this district because, and I've been in the district 20 years just like Natasha, because every training ultimately defaults to white comfort. And until we actually change making white staff comfortable, then nothing will change for black students, indigenous students, brown students. If we don't change that at the systemic level, then 20 years from now we're having the same damn conversation. And I don't know what training will look like because they told us, without telling us, you don't get to do your training anymore. I have a suspicion that we were starting to push a little bit and that got uncomfortable. What I do know is as long as white people are comfortable in what they've always done in the schools, curriculum-wise, behavior-wise, whatever is happening in the schools, nothing is going to change. And it's not, and I'm... It's weird because I'm the embodiment of every piece of privilege this society has to offer. But until people who look like me show up and demand this, nothing's going to change.
Oh my! Is that the most exhausting kind of human? Just the virtue signaling and the white guilt and part of it. And I thought, well, gosh, what happened at this school? Is there some like huge track record of racism, or was it just really this one lesson that this teacher thought was a good idea and wasn't? And now it's leading to this. And Jason's article had one example, says so that panel that he was, you know, got up and spoke. A panel claimed systemic racism exists in the school district with teachers openly using the N-word. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, yeah, if you've got teachers openly using the N-word, like, yeah, we might have an issue over in Spokane schools. Well, it turns out that they were referring to teachers teaching To Kill a Mockingbird. So it's like, and then, so if you think of it in that context, and that guy getting up and talking about, you know, how bad white people are, it's fairly ridiculous. So look, teachers are going to make mistakes. Sometimes they're not going to have the best thought out lessons. This was one of them. But if we're going to take every little instance and turn it into our schools are racist, we need to make white teachers uncomfortable, which I think also means we need to make white students uncomfortable, then that's not going to fix this situation that we have going on. It's really quite unbelievable. All right, coming up next, we have Florida Report. Ron DeSantis cracking down on squatters in Florida, not on his watch. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, make sure you're getting it ready to hit the market right now, even if you're not planning to put it on the market for months, or maybe once the Fed drops interest rates. So we're waiting right now to see if the Fed's going to drop interest rates, which is obviously going to be good to give a little boost to the home market. And Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com tells us that even if the Fed doesn't drop interest rates, he still does expect the housing market to do better over the summer than it did last summer.
If they stay where they're at right now, I actually think that values will stay closer to where they're at. We'll see lower appreciation. We'll see appreciation, but it'll be modest. But if they start to come back down, well, that's when I think we'll start to see more of the multiple offer situations and the bid ups in home sale prices.
Yeah. So if you're, again, thinking about selling your home while we're kind of waiting to see what is the market going to do this summer, is the Fed going to drop interest rates, get your home ready to hit the market. And Wes and his team at sellwithwes.com, they make this so easy. So you contact them. You can start by using their home value calculator right on their website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then Wes is going to do a free market analysis for you to kind of set your expectations of what the market is looking like. And then if you need cosmetic updates to your home just to make sure it really sparkles when it hits the market, they can not only help you manage those projects, they can help you pay for that work upfront. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, simply a better way to sell your home. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, Florida. That was my plane.
Yeah. Oh. That's like a deflating balloon
okay.
Right there.
You know, my sound effects aren't the best, but I'm working on them.
Okay.
So judgmental. Mm-hmm. So we have talked so much about the disaster in Washington involving landlord tenants. You got these tenant protections ever since the pandemic. They've been ratcheted up. They're more strict when it comes to landlords. And it has led to just full-blown squatter situations. Look, I don't care if you started something with a legitimate lease. If you haven't paid rent in a year or two, you're just a squatter. And so anyway, that has been this whole story, not only in Washington and New York. This woman got arrested trying to get bona fide squatters out of her parents' house after they died. We had the story of the illegal immigrant who said that he was teaching other immigrants how to simply use our laws against us and squat in homes. So anyway, in Florida, Ron DeSantis is like, absolutely not. And just yesterday, he signed a bill into law to stop squatters in their tracks in Florida. Here's a clip.
What passes muster in New York and California is not passing muster here. You are not going to be able to commandeer somebody's private property and expect to get away with it. We are in the state of Florida ending the squatter scam once and for all.
Go, Ron. I mean, so easy, right? You got a problem? Here's a solution. So we talked about it with my sister on our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello, hello.
Hello.
I'm very jealous of some of this sanity happening in Florida. But we need to talk about it because it's like, this is common sense stuff. We've been talking about all these issues with renters taking advantage of their protections to screw over landlords and just full-blown squatters. Well, in Florida, DeSantis is like, well, we're just going to fix that. And it does help that he's got Republican control in the legislature to be able to carry out sane policy. So he has just signed into law HB 621, which basically makes it impossible in Florida to be a successful squatter.
Yeah, it's true. And I can't even believe that this is something that we have to talk about. I mean, if there's one thing that's part of the American dream is like owning and protecting some like your property. I can't believe that this even had to be a law that was signed. But this bill essentially ends squatter rights, making it more not impossible for them to squat, but more easy for property owners to get rid of them. There's still things that are in place. They're going to have to property owners have to file a complaint with the sheriff's office, prove that they own the property, prove that these people are not there legally. And also they'll have to pay a fee for having them removed because they have to pay for the sheriff's time and et cetera. But now there's going to be just a lot more enforcement behind them having rights to the properties they own and getting rid of these people that have been squatting in their homes for I don't know how long in some cases.
Well, it makes it more instantaneous, which it should be. You're in my house. You don't have a right to be in my house. Isn't that crazy? That's like if somebody came to rob my house and then they're like, well, I'm not leaving. It's like, no, I called 911. You're robbing my house. And they're like, no, I'm just going to stay. And then all of a sudden they've got like rights. We have to go through this legal process of removing them, which is crazy. So it says under HB 621, if you have someone who unlawfully enters and remains on your property and they've been directed to leave but have not done so, you can basically contact law enforcement. And as long as you can prove they're not supposed to be here, like they're out, which is, again, pretty common sense stuff.
It's pretty common sense stuff. And it kind of sucks that we live in a world where we have to like hold a politician on a pedestal because he's doing common sense things to protect people that own property. I mean, it's just, I've seen so many horror stories, not just in Florida, but across the country of squatters just destroying the inside of property that leaves these property owners like to like pay for thousands and thousands of dollars in damage of people that weren't even supposed to be there to begin with. So in Florida, I think we've had an issue with it because a lot of people, this is a second home in Florida. So like these homes kind of get left unattended for long periods of time, which kind of leaves these windows open for people to squat in a property. But like it should be as simple as being like, hey, there's somebody in my property that shouldn't be there. And the cops are like, all right, I got you. And they come and remove them. But apparently until now, it wasn't so easy.
No, when we saw this case out of New York where a woman, I think it was in Queens, she goes in, it's like her parents' house that was left to her. And not only can she not get this person out, she ends up getting arrested and like has to prove that this. So it was like a squatter leasing out a house to another squatter who didn't have rights. And so I just want to note that under this new Florida law, it says it's a first degree misdemeanor if you make false statements in writing to obtain property, a second degree felony if you unlawfully occupy or trespass in a residential dwelling and intentionally cause more than $1,000 in damages, and a first degree felony if you knowingly advertise the sale or rent of a property without legal authority or ownership. So like it's a first degree felony in Florida now if you say, hey, you want to rent this house and it's not even your house, you're just letting a squatter come in. So
yeah, sanity. I also think that that's like one of the most important things about this is not just like making it easier for homeowners to get rid of the squatter problem, but to like impose like penalties on squatters themselves. Like there should be a penalty and repercussions for breaking the law. So
yeah, crazy. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I'm going down to Florida at the end of the next month. I'm going to find an alligator and I'm going to see if I can get it to make a meowing noise. Yeah, I'll just squeeze it, poke it.
Yeah, there'll be stick. No putting a cat close to it so it meows.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. The stock market has been going crazy. Have you seen this? Stock market doing very well right now. But given some of the other economic factors that we know to be true, does it mean that a slowdown is in store when it comes to the stock? Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital joins us this week to talk about it. Zach Abraham, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Always good to be here.
All right, react to this headline. A majority of investors believe a stock market pullback is near, according to a CNBC survey.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why they'd say that. That being said, you and I were talking about this a little bit off the air. I just think it's really important for people to realize that, I'll say it over and over and over again. And I think the best way to look at this, if you're somebody at home, just look out your window, right? Just look around. What makes sense? Is this stock market going up because everything is so great? I mean, is it? I mean, you can be the arbiter of that. Anybody can make their own judgment. That's not at all the case that we think. And I think it comes down to pretty simple math here, okay? You got the economy expanding at a supposed rate of about 3.2%. You got the government running 7% deficits. If you had normal levels of deficits, 2 to 3% of the economy, you'd be in recession right now. Okay, so the way we look at this, generally speaking, is I think people are looking at the stock market. I don't think that's what they should be looking at. I think everything's going to continue to go up as long as we're running those deficits. The key is that you have to also understand that you're in a falsified environment, meaning these things are not going up because they're worth more. They're going up because effectively the denominator is shrinking. We're all thinking about the stock market. I think much like other periods of times that we saw in inflationary environments like the 70s, I think there are going to be a lot of things that do really well. I don't think the overall stock market's going to be one of them.
So we've had you on to talk about gold before, and you said, I don't remember the percentage, but I want to say it was like, yeah, you can dabble in gold, but what did you say, like 7 or 8% maybe of your wealth in gold? And then you said you've done very well on Bitcoin, but you also have cautioned about Bitcoin. So I guess square that, where you're like, gold's doing so well and Bitcoin's done so well for us, but also you've cautioned against too much investment in those.
Yeah, and so when I'm talking about things, but the one thing people need to keep in mind is, you know, we have two portfolio managers, two full-time analysts, and one full-time trader on staff, right? So we're watching this stuff 24 hours a day. So what, literally 24 hours a day. So what I'm saying that we're doing, I'm not necessarily, Bitcoin is a perfect type of tool to have in a small limited amount in your portfolio while these conditions remain, right? The problem with most investors though is they get fixated on the asset and they don't keep their eyes on the environment. Okay. When the environment changes, which it will, Bitcoin will quit being such a great proxy. And I think gold will become a much better one. But both of them, and it's funny, whenever I say this, I end up ticking usually both parties off, people that love gold, people that love Bitcoin. Truthfully, at this point, both of them benefit from the exact same thing. So now, if you ask me right now, you've got a choice to hold $1 million worth of Bitcoin or $1 million worth of gold over the next 10 years, and you can't touch either one. There's not a question. I'm taking the gold, right? I'm taking the gold. And that's not because I'm sure the gold's going to win. I just feel better about, 4,000 years of recorded history as opposed to 10.
Yeah.
You know?
And you talk about a lot of this on your radio show, but you also are having one of your risk management live webinars coming up actually later today, Thursday, 3:30 p.m. There's still time to register, right?
Yep. You can still register it. Yeah, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You can come on to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com, a little dialogue box pops up and you can register right there, and it's free. And hope you get to listen to me yammer about markets for a while. But yeah, we do about a 45-minute presentation, walks through all of what we do with clients. Obviously, it's a summary, but you'll have a very good idea who we are, what we do, and how we do it. And then at the end, it's as simple as, hey, if you want to talk to me or one of our advisors, let us know and we'll hook up. If not, hopefully you leave more educated.
Yeah, so a good chance to make sure your retirement portfolio is properly protected against risk and crazy markets and what's happening with the election and global unrest. So Zach's free 2024 Outlook live webinar is today at 3:30 p.m. Again, you can still register now, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Before we get to our closing sanity check, which has to do with Sunny Hostin being put in her place on The View, I want to get to some questions and comments, shall we? Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. DeSantis just signed squatter prevention legislation in Florida. Is it crazy to believe the same legislation could ever be enacted in Washington? Yes, it is a little crazy, Bill Biz, to believe that it could happen today. But who knows, maybe down the road under a Republican governor? I don't know. Matthew Cook with a $5 super chat. Welcome back, baseball. Welcome back, Dave Newhouse. Is it opening day or something today?
It is.
Oh, wow. Opening day of the Mariners. Exciting.
I do think we should do a undivided day at the park. That'd be fun.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, and it's super affordable to go to a Mariners game these days, so that is a good idea for summer.
On
PSE, Merwin Wren says, my problem with forced electrification isn't curbing climate change. It's the power the government has over my access to energy. With the flip of a switch, we are at the government's discretion whether we have energy. I tend to agree that that is a concern of mine as well. And also, remember, they're already doing these sort of like you can opt in to letting the government control your thermostat and stuff, which I'm like, hard.
Why would you opt in?
I have no. Well, you get a discount. You get a discount if you do that. So no, not worth it. On Fergie, going back to the tried and true abortion, UW football fan says, with the national narrative around abortion, Dem women will like the governor's support in this battle. It's a good strategy.
I don't understand. She's
saying Fergie going after that Dems will like that.
Oh, yeah, Dems will, mm-hmm. but I don't know about everybody else.
That's why she's saying it's a good strategy.
Teen crimes, average Joe. It goes to show how the parents, the schools, and other adults in his life have failed him. Lastly, he fails himself. This is sad and pathetic. He needs some serious jail time and counseling. Talking about this Instagrammer who films himself going like 107 miles an hour on surface streets and says he's going to keep doing it because he makes money. Yeah, he does need some serious jail time.
They definitely shouldn't monetize those.
No, I don't.
We get demonetized for ridiculous
things. Talking about gender ideology. Yes. So I would be shocked. Maybe they just haven't seen this account yet. It seems hard to believe. So, Spencer Cole, they need to start hammering the parents for not watching their kids. Much like many of us on this page, we wouldn't be out continuing to act like this if it landed our parents in trouble. I tend to agree. DC Bindwell, everything is upside down. Parents are too busy worrying about being friends with their child that they don't make consequences and take actions to follow through to teach their child lessons in accountability and growth. I agree. It is parenting, but there are still kids that act out even with good parents. And so you need that backstop of a system that's going to hold them accountable for their actions. I mean, I think when we all grew up, you were almost more scared of what your parents would do than you would be of like the law enforcement.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
Cops would be bad, but like when you get home, there's a second element of the punishment.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
And my grandparents.
Yeah.
I mean, there was multi-generations.
I'm sorry. Hashtag make spanking great again. I'm seriously with a little like stick from the willow tree.
Right.
Just got to do it.
At least make it a threat.
Yes. Someone, I mean, don't beat your kids. Do I have to say that? I'll get demonetized. Don't beat your kids. All right. In our closing sanity check, there's a black author who wrote a book that apparently Sonny Hostin on The View is deeply offended by. And he's going to give us a master class in staying cool when you're confronted with crazy. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. All right, the author in question is a guy named Coleman Hughes, and he wrote a book called The End of Race Politics, Arguments for a Colorblind America. And Coleman Hughes is black, and so he writes this book, again, Arguments for a Colorblind America. And we all know that there are some people who just are not comfortable, and it's usually people of color and people on the left. Oh, if you're black or you're a person of color and you don't fall into our way of thinking, like, you're just a stooge, right? You are just bought and paid for, and you can't possibly think for yourself. And we see that on The View from Sonny Hostin all the time, where it's like this deep offense that a black person would dare, you know, take the side sometimes of conservatives, or would dare question how the left is talking about race. So I want to play this clip for you so you can just see, again, I think it's a masterclass in keeping calm when confronted with crazy. Here's the clip.
And I've read your book twice because I wanted to give it a chance. Mm. Your argument that race has no place in that equation is really fundamentally flawed.
And what Martin Luther King wrote in his book, Why We Can't Wait, mm-hmm. is he called it, we need a Bill of Rights for the disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, we should address racial inequality. Yes, right. We should address the legacy of slavery. But the way to do that is on the basis of class. And that will disproportionately target blacks and Hispanics because they're disproportionately poor. But it will be doing so in a way that also helps the white poor, in a way that addresses poverty as the thing to be addressed.
That part is true, but as you are a student of Dr. King, I'm not only a student of Dr. King, I know his daughter, Bernice. Your argument for colorblindness, I think, is something that the right has co-opted. And so many in the black community, if I'm being honest with you, because I want to be, believe that you are being used as a pawn by the right, and that you're a charlatan of sorts.
He's not a Republican.
So how do you?
He's never voted for a Republican. You've
said that you're a conservative.
No,
you did. You actually said that in a podcast that you did 2 weeks ago.
I said I was a conservative.
Yes, you did. So, but my question to you, is, how do you respond to those critics?
Okay, let's give him an answer.
First thing I want to, I think it's very important. The quote that you just pointed out about doing something special for the Negro. That's yes. from the book Why We Can't Wait that I just mentioned.
Yes.
A couple paragraphs later, he lays out exactly what that something special was,
yes.
and it was the Bill of Rights for the Disadvantaged, a broad class-based policy.
But he also says you must include race.
No, he didn't. He says it's
yes, he does.
Okay, well, everyone should go read the book Why We Can't Wait. Let's not get sidetracked by that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been co-opted by anyone. I've only voted twice, both for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Although I'm an independent, I would vote for a Republican, mm-hmm. probably a non-Trump Republican if they were compelling. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any evidence I've been co-opted by anyone, and I think that that's an ad hominem tactic people use to not address really the important conversations we're having here. And I think it's better, and it would be better for everyone if we stuck to the topics rather than make it about me.
With no evidence that I've been co-opted. I want to give you the opportunity to respond to the criticism.
I appreciate it. There's no evidence that I've been co-opted by anyone. I have an independent podcast. Mm-hmm. I work for CNN as an analyst. Mm-hmm. I write for the Free Press. I'm independent in all of these endeavors, and no one is paying me to say what I'm saying. I'm saying it because I feel it.
Yep. Amen. That's what it looks like when you have someone who can remain calm when they're confronted by someone who's acting crazy. But also that's what it looks like when you debate with facts versus when you debate with feelings. And I really think that was a masterclass. I'd also note she builds up these straw men, and that's what you always see when people don't have a legitimate argument. You know, she said that the black community believes you're being used as, many in the black community believe you're being used as a pawn and you're a charlatan. That's what she believes. That when they say many people believe this and they're not specific, that's just what they believe. You see that used by the media all the time. Like, what would you say to critics who say this? And it's like, okay, that's just what the media thinks of you. And they're trying to spin it into a question. So good for him for sidestepping that and getting back to the issue at hand. Love it. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Coming up on Sundays with Subscribers, have you heard the story of the 80-something-year-old woman who a couple years ago was banned from a local YMCA because she complained about a man being in the woman's locker room with children present? Well, she is now suing to get her WYMCA? Is it separate?
I think it's just the Y.
She's now suing to get her YMCA membership back. She's going to join us alongside her attorney. Also on Sundays with Subscribers, we will reveal who has won voting for our 2024 Charity of the Year. So if you've not signed up to support our show already, please do so. It's just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. While you're there, don't forget to shop our merch store for some of our Common Sense 2024 gear. So subscribers, we'll see you Sunday. The rest of you, we'll see you Monday at noon.